The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Ransomware attacks hit America's second largest school district, plus ringing the recession alarm bells in Germany, and Pakistan assesses the damage after catastrophic floods.
Crops have been wiped out. Houses have been damaged or destroyed. 1.6 million homes are in that state. And people's livelihoods have gone. So it's going to take an awful lot of rebuilding.
It's Wednesday, September 7th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The International Atomic Energy Agency has called for the establishment of a safe zone around Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, which is occupied by Russian forces. That appeal follows a report from the agency showing damage to the plant and high levels of stress for the Ukrainian staff working there. Wall Street Journal reporter Lawrence Norman has more.
They called for a safe zone to be established, which would basically mean a withdrawal of soldiers on both sides and a stop to the conflict in that area. It's something that's been called for months, and there's little sign of it happening.
The situation at the plant remains tense, with Russian and Ukrainian officials trading accusations of shelling of the plant in recent weeks. Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes has asked a federal judge for a new trial, saying one of the prosecution's star witnesses visited her to express regret. Holmes was convicted of 4 counts of criminal fraud in January. In a filing Tuesday, Holmes said former Theranos lab director Adam Rosendorf showed up unannounced at her home last month and told Holmes's partner that he had regretted his role in her trial. Rosendorf declined to comment when reached by phone Tuesday. A spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of California also declined to comment. America's second largest school district was hit by a ransomware attack over the weekend. The Los Angeles Unified School District did not detail the cyber breach or provide specifics about a ransom request, but the district did say in a statement there was significant disruption to the system's infrastructure. The school district has asked federal investigators for help. Hackers have targeted school districts more frequently in recent years, especially during the height of the pandemic and remote school. And more Americans are opting to buy luxury vehicles than ever before, fueled by buyers who were able to save cash during the pandemic and growing wealth among upper-income shoppers. According to data analytics firm J.D. Power, the share of new vehicles sold by luxury brands such as BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and Tesla hit a record 17.3% of the overall U.S. car market in June. That data is the latest evidence of a broader split that has emerged in the U.S. economy, in which those with means have continued to splurge while the less wealthy have pulled back. The head of one of Europe's major banks says Germany is heading toward recession. Deutsche Bank CEO Christian Sewing said today that a recession in Europe's biggest economy is inevitable. To learn why that is and what it could mean for Europe, we're joined by Wall Street Journal reporter Xavier Fontegloria. Xavier, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, good morning, Luke. Thanks.
So what exactly did Sewing have to say?
Basically, he said that the recession is already unavoidable in Germany due to high energy prices. He said that for now, German households and businesses seem to be able to cope with inflation, but that this could change very soon if central banks, in this case the European Central Bank, doesn't act quickly to fight it. Just a reminder that inflation in the Eurozone is at 9.1%, which is way higher than in the US, and here interest rates are still at zero.
Xavier, what would a recession in Germany mean for the rest of Europe?
Well, you said at the beginning, Germany is the largest economy in the Eurozone, and it's the region's manufacturing powerhouse. So many, if not all, countries in Europe produce, trade with, and largely depend on Germany in this sense. And we have many other countries in Europe that are suffering the same problems as Germany does. Basically, high energy prices that are squeezing consumers' incomes and also firms' margins.
And so how is the German government preparing for this?
Yeah, like as many other European governments, the government has recently announced a relief package for households and businesses that intends to cushion the impact of high energy prices. It also says that it wants to reform the energy market, but that's a long-term shot and it has to be done at the European level. So this will take time, and economists doubt that the short-term measures, meaning this relief package, will be enough to prevent the recession.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Xavier Fontagloria. Xavier, thanks so much.
Thanks, Luke. Have a good day.
Coming up, devastating floods have left Pakistan inundated and under pressure to fix heavily damaged infrastructure. But is the country up to the challenge of worsening weather? We'll have that story after the break.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Catastrophic flooding in Pakistan has left more than 10% of the country underwater and an estimated 30 million people in need of assistance. And fingers are already being pointed over who's to blame, with some in Pakistan blaming the country's government, while officials in turn are blaming the floods on climate change and saying big emitters are really the ones at fault. Journal reporter Saeed Shah joins us now from Islamabad, Pakistan, with the very latest on the situation in the country. Saeed, thanks for being with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So you have traveled around southern Pakistan in recent days. What have you seen? What are people telling you?
The scenes are just horrifying. The floods have come on a sort of biblical scale. What appears to be a sea has emerged in areas and you can't see where the water stops. And in many of these places, the people were poor to begin with. This is a deprived area of the country. And these people are now even further been made destitute. They're sort of living on the sides of roads, any bits of high ground they can find, just anywhere.
Pakistan regularly sees monsoon rains, Saeed. Why were these so devastating?
The volume of rainwater was much more than usual, three times as much falls on average during the monsoon. And it fell in the south of the country more this time. So over five times as much as normal monsoon rains fell in the south of the country. And that area is just not the usual catchment for the monsoon. And the water really has nowhere to go. It's sort of stuck in a flat area in the south, whereas normally it falls in the hilly and mountainous north, and those hills direct the water into the rivers and eventually out to sea.
Beyond the immediate loss of life from these floods, what are likely to be the broader costs of all of this?
Well, there's going to be huge long-term ramifications of this. Crops have been wiped out. Houses have been damaged or destroyed. 1.6 million homes are in that state. And people's livelihoods have gone. So it's going to take an awful lot of rebuilding. There's 5,500 kilometers of roads alone which have been damaged or destroyed. So all that infrastructure will have to be rebuilt. And the bill, Pakistan estimates, will be over $10 billion.
So I guess the question then is, can the government manage this response on its own?
The government says, quite frankly, that it can't. It wants the international community to step in to help. There's no way that Pakistan can find the sort of resources needed, even for the immediate rescue and relief effort, leaving aside the long-term rehabilitation. So it is asking the international community to come to its aid And in particular, it's saying that rich countries have actually caused climate change, and it is poor countries like Pakistan who are at the receiving end with freakish weather events like this monsoon.
And what has the government actually been able to do so far?
The government is trying to help those in need, but just the sheer number of people is too much. It is getting aid to places. It is mounting rescue missions. Where I was, however, there was very little sign of aid. In fact, almost none. People were rigging up little shacks for themselves to live in, which is literally putting some sticks in the ground and putting some plastic over the top to protect themselves from the sun. You have to remember, it is incredibly hot and humid, which is another thing people are having to deal with. Disease is spreading. There is a shortage of food, of drinking water. People are in a really desperate state.
Saeed, it sounds like the Pakistani government has a lot on its plate right now. Are people willing to cut the government a little slack in terms of its response?
People are already very angry. People who've been displaced, the people who are now on the verge of starvation, do blame the government for not having adequate flood defenses in place. They do blame the government for not providing them with aid now that they are destitute and on the streets. The government, of course, says it's doing everything it can, but the scale of the crisis is just too much for Pakistan's government to handle. As you can imagine, this is a fairly dysfunctional developing country with limited capacity to reach out. The army and the navy and the air force have also got involved in the aid effort, but in the vast majority of people affected by this have say they have not yet received aid.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Saeed Shah joining us from Islamabad, Pakistan. Saeed, thanks so much for the update.
Thank you very much.
And finally, bands and fans alike have long complained of poor audio quality in giant arenas. But things are getting better, thanks to sound engineers and architects who are working together to develop ways to cope, including hanging drapes in hockey arenas that double as concert venues, or even lining an arena's ceiling with thin bags of fiberglass. WSJ contributor Chris Cornelis has more.
What they have now is they actually have their audio devices. They will take a humidity and a temperature reading at the beginning, and it will make real-time adjustments to stabilize the sound and at least keep a uniform sound. But it's not just the technology. It's putting things like upholstered seats into the arena. The upholstering will absorb sound during sound check, but also the upholstering. We've all been in shows where, okay, we're only going to sell half the arena. It's not going to be a full arena. Well, those seats that aren't being sold, at least they have upholstering to absorb sound.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.